Super Bowl.
This is Hawks Talk.
And it's safe to say that the success this year will hinge on their ability to not just sustain the blow from losing Lynch, but find in Rawls a replacement who can duplicate what Lynch brought. Good morning, Seahawk fans, and welcome into Hawks Talk. I am your host, Joel Gunderson, here. Thanks for checking us out. Whether you're on CSNNW.com or iTunes, I appreciate you taking some time to check out the show. We are here every Monday morning following the Seahawks games with recaps, analysis, and a look ahead to the following week. Now, this morning, I wish I had some better news, unfortunately. Yesterday, the Seahawks helped christen the Los Angeles Rams' return to the City of Angels. If you're a Rams fan, you're pretty pleased with how things turned out. As I predicted last week when I joined Dusty and Cam on 1080 The Fan, we would be in for one of the worst offensive games the NFL will have to offer this season, and I wasn't far off. The teams combined for 4 field goals. The only problem was that 3 of them came off the foot of Gary Zuerlein. Los Angeles, which, by the way, has yet to score a touchdown this season, walked away with a 9-3 victory to even their record to 1-1 and dropped Seattle to 1-1 in the process as well. Now, to be fair, this wasn't just bad offense. The defenses had a ton to do with it. Although Seattle did shoot themselves in the foot on numerous occasions, they had 3 offensive pass interference penalties in this game. I don't think I've ever seen a team have that many in one single game. But the Rams and Seahawks are 2 of the top defenses in the NFL, so this was not a huge surprise that we'd be in for a defensive struggle. Los Angeles, by the way, through 2 games now, 0 touchdowns. It was really evident early when Thomas Rawls was thrown for 2 big losses on his first 2 runs. It wasn't just Los Angeles penetrating through to get to Wilson. They were meeting the running backs in the backfield. Rawls was so ineffective, in fact, his first half stats, and he would get injured with a leg injury. We don't know the extent of it yet or how long he'll be out, but he had 7 carries for -7 yards. And it was a combination of Seattle's offensive line, which we've talked about ad nauseum already this season, how they're going to struggle. But Los Angeles has one of the, if not the best, defensive line in the NFL with Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, Michael Brockers. I mean, they are a loaded line, and then you throw in Alec Ogletree in the linebacking unit. So this was not a surprise early. But one thing that was really evident was of how things were going to go was Russell Wilson coming off that ankle injury last week against Miami. No one really knew for sure how he was going to look. He did start. He practiced every game this week or every day this week. As Joe Buck pointed out numerous times in the broadcast, and Troy Aikman as well, that he's never missed a practice. But he did not look to be 100%, and clearly he won't be, and he won't be for a while. There was a few opportunities, especially early on in the first 2 drives, where lanes were open that he normally would have taken off and scrambled, where he didn't even attempt to, and he really looked tentative and not wanting to get out and get hit. And he was getting rid of the ball a lot quicker on plays, even though he wasn't necessarily pressured, which didn't happen very often, but you could tell he wanted to get the ball out, was very tentative to take hits. And he took one from Alec Ogletree in the first half as well that could have been a really bad landing, but he unfortunately rolled out and didn't seem to get hurt too bad. In the first half, I mentioned Rawls' stats, but Seattle had 14 rushing yards on 14 attempts. I mean, they couldn't find anything. And the times they were able to break out, it was Christian Michael, and he had the more effective start. And when they were able to find some running lanes, it was Christian Michael. He had 4 rushes for 17 yards in the first half. He was really their only true threat to run the ball or have any success, because as Wilson was attempting to throw the ball downfield, there was not a lot of intermediate throws. They were going deep a lot of the times, trying to test the Los Angeles secondary, which is young and inexperienced, but they weren't finding any success. So it was essentially Christian Michael running the ball, and especially after Rawls got hurt, that was their only weapon. Now, Seattle's defense was just as good, and that's a really important thing to look at, obviously holding Los Angeles out of the end zone the entire game. They actually held the ball, Seattle did, for 17 minutes of the first half. Their defense was able to get Los Angeles out, and after that first drive where Los Angeles really marched down the field, all they were able to get the rest of the half was 1 extra field goal, but for the most part, that was the only time they actually established some momentum on offense. Seattle's defense really, really played well. And like I said, Wilson's scrambling ability was severely limited. Los Angeles headed into the half up 6-3, and it was really evident coming out of the second half, especially the first couple of drives. Seattle really started to build some momentum on the ground with Chris DeMichael. He had a much better flow than Rawls did, even before Rawls got hurt. And this appears to be kind of the perfect situation going forward, assuming Rawls' injury is not too bad and he won't miss a lot of time. See, it really sets up well for Seattle, because in today's NFL, there's no need to have a one-man show. It looks like Los Angeles probably is going to be heading that direction with Todd Gurley, but you have to wonder, as the season wears on, he's going to break down. He has a history of injuries already. So if Seattle can have the lightning effect with Chris DeMichael and the thunder effect with Thomas Rawls, it really will set up well for them down the road. Let these guys battle it out in practice week after week, and then on Sundays, ride the hot hands. Or, if someone gets injured, then it sets up for itself. Now, after Rawls went out, Alex Collins did get a couple carries in the third quarter, the rookie out of Arkansas, but two carries, 0 yards. He was not effective. He does have a little bit more wiggle than Rawls does, so he's probably closer in line with what Michael is, but clearly this is going to be if Rawls is injured now. And after the way they performed today, I came into the game thinking that Rawls was the clear leader because of his running style. A lot more effective, I feel like, in Seattle's offense, because he closely resembles what Marshawn Lynch brought, and it gives you a sense of continuity going through from last year. But the way that Michael ran compared to Rawls, even when Rawls was healthy, a lot of questions still remain. I mean, clearly neither guy is up to the caliber of what Lynch was, and you don't expect them to be. You want them to each bring their own asset to the table, but right now Rawls looks completely lost in the offense, to be honest with you. But it didn't really matter today, because both sides were dominating defensively. Los Angeles had a lot more success through the air than Seattle did, but that was about the only storyline to me that stuck out, was they were able to go deep a little bit on the Seattle secondary, which we'll touch on a little bit later. If Los Angeles can find any sort of offense, and I mean any sort of offense, and they look okay with Case Keenum. I think he's going to be a nice placeholder until they get Jared Goff in there. But they could be a real factor in the NFC West. There's so much talent defensively for that team. And what's really scary is how young they are. They have Aaron Donald, who's 25. Alec Ogletree is 24. Michael Brockers is 25. And Robert Quinn is 26. Those four alone are the basis of a dominating defense, but they have other guys around them as well that are starting to round into form. And once all those come together and really get into their prime, they could be a nightmare for some teams as they get going here in a couple years. And then on offense, they have Todd Gurley, they have Tavon Austin, they have Kenny Britt, they have some pieces there to really be a factor. And like I said, if they get comfortable with Keenum at quarterback, and he seemed to do better today clearly better than he did last week against the 49ers, but I think you can almost throw that week one defeat for Los Angeles out the window. That was not even the same team that showed up on Sunday, especially defensively, but offensively, even though they only scored 9 points and had 3 field goals, you can't take away too much, because Seattle clearly has a dominant defense as well. Interesting stat coming out, Seattle actually outgained Los Angeles 306 yards to 283. But a big storyline throughout the game was the horrible field position Seattle had. They had 10 drives during the game, 7 of them started inside their own 20-yard line, and the other 3 were touchbacks that started at the 25. Seattle was constantly facing 80, 85, 75-yard drives, and against the Los Angeles defense, you're not going to be able to establish that continually throughout the game. So, being limited already from the offensive line, throwing in the Los Angeles defense, and then the field position, Seattle's offense was up against it all game long. Now, Coach Carroll talked to the media afterwards, and it's interesting to point out that they kept showing him on the sidelines throughout the game, and I have never seen him that animated. Now, he's a very animated character, but usually it's more when he's excited or spurts when he's upset, but continually throughout the broadcast, they would show him. And there was one point when I believe it was Doug Baldwin was called for one of the offensive pass interferences. Carroll was so livid that he threw his headset out and ran directly into Baldwin. Didn't even see him, but he was chasing the ref down. He was so upset. And it was very evident that he's frustrated. And you can blame some of his frustrations on the offensive line, some of it on the injury to Russell Wilson's ankle. But there's no way that he can be very happy with the offense right now. 8 quarters, one touchdown for the Hawks this season. Now, I know the line is in flux, but Seattle has way too many weapons on the outside for this to be a continuing issue. Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, Paul Richardson's really coming along. He's going to, looks like he could be a real steal here, the kid out of Colorado. They still have Jimmy Graham, who, for all intents and purposes, could be a top three or four tight end in the league if they could ever figure out how to use them and if he could get out of his own head. But with those four, plus the arm of Wilson and eventually the threat of the legs, they have to be producing better than they are. Here's what Carroll had to say afterwards when he met with the media.
We're really disappointed to come down here and play in this opportunity, start the season and all, and have a chance to get 2-0 and to come out and play like that and not give us a real shot to get ahead was tough day. And those guys did a nice job. They hung on to the ball well. They played a good, solid football game, and that's all it took today for them. We got in our own way. I don't know how we had all the pass interference penalties on offense, but we did. And they were very disruptive in the game. It was going to be a tight game. I thought the defense played really well again and held them down for the most part, but they did make some plays and did enough to get their field goals, and you got to hand it to them. On the other side of the ball, I never could have thought that we would go the first couple weeks and not score like but one touchdown. I'm just surprised at that, and we're better than that, and we're going to go back to work and zero in. It's early in the year, and we got a lot of stuff that we can get better at and improve, and we're going to do that.
What did you see?
I just thought the official was, you know, in a difficult position to call what he called, and I didn't think it was, you know. But that, you know, I'm going to gripe about calls all the time. That was just one of them. Yeah, I think really the first 2 weeks have felt like that both games. You know, we've had, and look at the starts again. I think it was 22 last week. I don't know what it was this week, but I don't think it's a whole lot better. We've not been able to shift the field position in our own favor, and when you don't get any turnovers, you know, we can't change what's happening. So we just have to play the punt game, and this is a fine punter and a punting team, and they did a nice job on us, so we had to overcome it, and we weren't able to do that today.
When you say there's things to work on, what's one or two of the key ones?
Well, our third down's got to go up again. We got to get our third downs going on offense and keep converting. And we have to not have offensive pass interference penalties. You know, those were crushers today, and it was unfortunate in those drives. So we have to do better there. We have to figure that out. But it will come down to converting. And I would like to see us run the ball. We ran the ball a little bit in the third quarter and got it going a little bit, but not like we had thought we could early on. So we need to – the numbers look really skewed because of that crazy play we got knocked way back. But we're much better than that. We need to show that.
It's a tough matchup you got here.
No question. We know these guys are fantastic. We've faced two great defensive lines, and I think our guys have learned a lot. I thought they protected well today for the most part and gave us a chance. I thought we protected better than we have in past games against these guys, so we're going in the right direction, but we got a lot of work to do.
Obviously, you're totally focused on the passing game, but was there any point over the last 2 days where nostalgia hit you? I mean, obviously.
Sam, absolutely not. That had no factor in any of this and no issue, not for me or for anybody else around here. That had nothing to do with it.
The way the game was called, you mentioned the 10 penalties. Was it different than what you were expecting going in?
No, I thought it was going to be hard. I thought this was going to be a hard one, and it was. And we needed to overcome some stuff that happened, and we just got to do better than that. He got kicked in the kind of lower leg. It's above his ankle, but he's got a contusion. The X-rays are fine, so he's just going to be sore and got to come back from it.
The challenge of getting the running game going. What did you see there?
Well, it just took us a while to figure it out. What we needed to do the way they were playing us and how they were attacking line of scrimmage. They're really good, you know. And we needed to make sure that we figured it out, and it just took us a while and not soon enough. We weren't able to stay with it long enough to really develop it in the second half.
How about the heat and the noise in the Coliseum? Did they affect your team?
It was a warm day. The noise was not a factor.
How did you feel Russell played, and was he limited much by his...
I think you could see he's a little bit limited, but I thought he did great under the circumstances, and he was able to get out a few times and avoid some pressure. And I thought it was a real good effort by him. There are not too many throws that he was off on, you know. Did a nice job with the deep ball today. And kept the ball moving, kept it out of his hands like we had anticipating wanting to do. So I thought he played solid, you know.
And last question,
Lockett's injury and then return to make
Yeah, he had a little bit of a sprained knee and he just came back. I mean, he was supposed to be hurt and he came back and did a an obviously great job to give us a chance to jump out and on the last drive. Just didn't turn out right.
You have to remember, he's sort of a living legend down in Los Angeles, despite the way things ended with the NCAA violations and him sort of kind of hightailing out the back door to Seattle. But, you know, he won two national championships. He completely turned them around from irrelevancy, which as a program, they should never be irrelevant, being USC. So I think going back into that stadium, it had to be a very surreal experience for him. And I know that he had to have been feeling the pressure in front of 95,000 Los Angeles, who, let's face it, probably most of them are USC fans. A lot of them had to be coming back to see Coach Carroll and see how he would do. You know, the first time that Seattle is there, I think that added to it. I think that added to his stress, and I think that Seattle's performance, obviously, on the backside, didn't help. But he was clearly salty, and clearly he's frustrated right now. You really have to give it up for Russell Wilson, 22 of 35 for 254 yards. He was only technically sacked twice, but he was under constant pressure. And I think at one point they showed a stat he had been knocked down, hit, or bumped 23 times already, and that was still in the third quarter. So he was under constant pressure, but really held in there tight, especially with that ankle injury. But any threat he has of running the ball right now is gone. It's taken away a huge element of what Seattle wants to do offensively. Wilson did meet with the media afterwards as well.
You know, we were able to battle offense and defense. Defense did a great job. It was obviously two great defenses, and we did good on offense in the sense of making a few plays here and there when we needed to, but we didn't make enough. And ultimately, our goal every time we step on the field is score one more point than them. Hopefully, a lot more. But the goal is to score at least one more point than them. And we were close there at the end. We put a lot of pressure on there at the end, and unfortunately, we lost to a very, very good football team, the Rams. They always play us tough. We have tons of respect for who they are.
So you didn't feel limited in any way physically or something that you couldn't do out there that you
normally were able to do? No, I was trying to just trust my reads and make the plays and make the throws and move on to the next play and keep battling. I had a few runs in there. Their defense flies around, so I had a few runs in there and got down on a few. I got to give credit to, Seahawks training staff and all the things they did, and also my guy Drew just getting me ready because I wasn't supposed to be playing, for a couple weeks probably, but they thought, maybe, but ultimately we had the mindset that we're gonna, get on my feet and move around and make it happen and find a way, and I think ultimately it's what you set your mind to, especially when you're trying to get back and. Every time I get an opportunity, I want to step on the field with these guys. It's a great group of guys. It's the best teammates you could ask for, guys that will fight for you, and I'll fight for them, and we'll fight together. So, unfortunately, we didn't get a win tonight, but we look forward to the next opportunity to play. We look forward to preparing. We got to get better across the board. We got to get better across the board, and once we do, it's gonna be a tough sight to see.
As you heard Wilson say there, he should not be playing. And in his own words, he probably should not be in there for a couple weeks. But as we touched on last week, the depth behind him at quarterback is so minuscule that they don't have a choice. They can't wait for him to get healthy. They can't put in Trevon Boykin. They can't put in Jay Heaps, who they signed last week. If you're relying on Jay Heaps, your season's probably over. If you're relying on a rookie, an undrafted rookie in Boykin, your season's probably over. They don't have a choice. Wilson needs to be in there. And he said it as well. He goes, as he tells us, he goes, I'm not in there to run. But like we said, it's the threat of him running that opens up everything else because he can. He doesn't want to, but when he does, he's effective at it and everything else opens up. And that offensive line is going to look a lot better when teams can't just put 8-9 guys in the box because they're going to have to stay back knowing that Wilson can beat them if they shoot the wrong gap and miss him. Then he's going to be off for 20 yards. After the loss, though, here's three things that I learned from the Seattle Seahawks. I actually think Seattle's offensive line may be better off long-term than we thought. Yes, statistically, the Rams were dominant and held Seattle just over 300 yards. But as the game wore on, especially the run game as the second half progressed, the Seattle Seahawks offensive line actually began to find a rhythm, especially when Christian Michael's in the game, as I touched on before. His speed suits the line perfectly because right now they're not able to hold their blocks for as long as you like. And they're not going to be until they continue to find a rhythm and gel and just flat out get better. But when Michael gets his foot in the dirt, he can really move. And he's got an excellent plant and turn up field. And that's something that they need because they're not going to be able to expect their offensive line to hold their blocks 2, 3, 4 seconds. It's going to be a quick get through the gap and go. He's going to make them look better than they actually are, but especially when you consider the level of competition that they've faced so far this season between the Dolphins and the Rams, two of the better defensive lines in the NFL, I was actually pleasantly surprised with the Lions' performance. Number two, Seattle is only going to go as far as their secondary allows them to, and that might sound a little interesting because the Legion of Boom has such a great reputation. But on Sunday, the Rams' receivers continually beat guys deep. Now, it was a couple in particular, Deshaun Shedd, as much as I hate to say it, being a local kid, and I actually had a chance to work with him when he was at Portland State, and you could not find a better individual than Deshaun, but he was torched numerous times downfield. Like I said, Kenny Britt had a huge game, Tavon Austin got loose a couple times, and Jeremy Lane was beat as well. Now, they're still in good hands overall. You still have Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas is still doing his thing, and Richard Sherman is still Richard Sherman, but if Shedd and Lane play like they did on Sunday, Seattle's going to be in trouble. Way too many penalties, way too many times beat deep. And third, where in the world is Jimmy Graham? This is becoming a weekly game that we have to play. And I know this isn't the Saints, and he's not going to have the same type of impact he had in Seattle because the offenses are completely different. But this is turning into a very lopsided trade, and Seattle's coming out on the bottom. We've talked about it for 3 weeks now, and we're going to continue to touch on it. But Seattle's offensive line is the one unit that can keep them out of the Super Bowl. They are stacked everywhere else. And not having Max Unger around at center, who they traded to New Orleans to get Jimmy Graham in return, it just feels foolish right now not to have him. Graham can't block. And as a tight end, if you're not having an impact by catching the ball, you have to be able to block. Otherwise, he's just an extra body. Now, he didn't have a bad game on Sunday. He had 3 catches for 42 yards. But it's the fact that he's not making an impact. He was brought in and widely considered one of the most dynamic playmakers in the league, not just at tight end, but at any skill position. And when Seattle got him, all that sizzle he brought with him now has seemed to have gone by the wayside. Not to mention his huge false start penalty on Seattle's last drive, which ultimately ended in the turnover, so who knows if it actually would have taken place, but he had a false start. He just seems lost. And you wonder if he really is buying into the system because he knows he's not going to have an impact like he had in New Orleans. But honestly, Seattle seems just as lost as how to use him as well. It's not a one-way street here. He doesn't know what he's doing, and they don't know how to use him. So it's really a poor fit right now. They're not going to cut him. They're not going to cut bait with him because he's too talented, and he's still not even in the prime of his career yet. But Graham and Seattle, they have got to get this figured out, and if they don't, it's going to be a huge waste of talent. Now, this isn't something I learned today, obviously, so I didn't throw that in there as one of the three things, but I'm done doubting Russell Wilson. He was clearly playing at less than 100%. He'd been pressured all game long, and his receivers, like I said, had been called for 3 offensive pass interferences. Yet here he was with less than 2 minutes remaining in the game, and the first thing he does is drop a 53-yard dime to Tyler Lockett, a beautiful pass when they were backed up well in their own territory, knowing they needed a score to win, down 6. Now, the narrative nationally on Russell Wilson is still a little out there. People don't quite know what to make of him. He still has a little bit of a label of a game manager, which I think is unfair because he clearly is dynamic and has the ability to take over games. But his ability to stay calm and lead drives, especially late in the fourth quarter, whether it's week 2 or the playoffs or the Super Bowl, it hasn't always worked out where they've scored and won the games, but he always puts them in a position to be successful. I mean, he really does. And at this point, he's obviously, like I said, not 100%, but at some point he will be. You have to like Seattle's chances based on his ability to stay calm under pressure alone. Like I said before, the only thing that can really keep this team from making it to the Super Bowl, aside from injuries, is the offensive line. Wilson has clearly established himself as one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and I've always doubted him a little bit just because you don't quite know because the team around him has been so good of what he really is, but he's proving us all wrong. I mean, the guy clearly gets it and knows what he's doing. Looking ahead to next week, the rivalry is renewed. San Francisco in Seattle. San Francisco is an interesting team so far this season. They opening week, they shut out, obliterate, completely dominate these Los Angeles Rams. It was one of the worst offensive performances we've ever seen. And a lot of it was due to the performance of San Francisco's defense, but that's not something that Chip's teams have always been known for. And then yesterday, they turned right around and get blown out in Carolina by the Panthers 46-27. So a very Jekyll and Hyde teams two weeks into the season. Obviously, at this point, you don't really know who a lot of teams are as they're still trying to get their bearings. But their first year under Chip Kelly, Blaine Gabbert under center, a new-look defense, a new-look offense, a new-look franchise. And this feels like a rivalry that was building to a crescendo a couple years ago, and then as soon as Harbaugh took off, it's fizzled out. But there's still a lot of hatred there, and it's an inter-conference game, still important. And with Chip being so new in San Francisco, Seattle can't take them light in any sense because you don't know what you're going to get from them. Are they going to be the team that defensively just put all kinds of clamps on the Rams, or are they going to be the one that let Cam Newton do whatever he wanted to yesterday? We don't know that yet. We won't know it for a few weeks, really, who San Francisco is. So it's still early in the year. It's a tricky game because, like I said, it's a rivalry game. You never quite know what you're going to get. San Francisco is obviously going to be ready to come in there and prove a point. Seattle looks a little vulnerable, especially on offense after yesterday. So you have to figure San Francisco has the confidence that they can come in and do it because they already dominated the Rams, and then the Rams beat the Seahawks. And I've never been one to buy into, well, they beat this team and this team beat that team, so therefore, you know how the cycle goes and lots of people can fall into that trap. I've never been one to do that. I don't believe that just because San Francisco beat the Rams, the Rams beat the Seahawks, that San Francisco's automatically going to beat the Seahawks. It doesn't work that way because so many factors vary into how games turn out. But Seattle and San Francisco, when these two teams meet, and it's the old cliche, but you can kind of throw the record books out because they don't like each other, and there's such a history there with these two franchises. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Hawks Talk here on CSN. Thanks for joining us, as always. As I mentioned, you can follow us on CSNNW.com or on iTunes under Hawks Talk, and our channel is CSNNW. You got to hear from Coach Carroll and Russell Wilson following the Seahawks' 9-3 defeat at the hands of the Los Angeles Rams. Join us again on Monday next week as we recap the Seahawks and 49ers, which kicks off 1 o'clock on Sunday at CenturyLink Field. Thanks for joining me.